Rinpoche said that the quality of his English is not very good. He's been now 3 years he's been trying to speak English, so he mixes up his English and Tibetan, and it's very difficult to translate, so he is speaking in English. And so he says that we should ask what we need. Now we are like asleep. All this phenomena of war and sickness and this life, the old age, sickness, death, birth, all this is like a dream. It has no truth. But we do have the reality of this body. However, this is, you do not see that this is now a dream. You are caught up in this phenomena. But actually, in a dream, pain and suffering and good and happiness, they are both the same. Like now we have this body, which is like a long dream. It is not like there are the two kinds of dreams of both daydream and night dream, which in the morning when you wake up from sleep, from your dream, it is you feel different from when you were dreaming in at night. And it is the same when one dies and takes rebirth, one goes through the intermediate state, then again one wakes up into another reality, another dream. But there is the dream, there is the two different kinds of dream of night and daytime dream, but they're both all dream.
Then this vague near dream. This means is this not vague? Bad habit.
He says we need to wake up from this dream. It is not easy. It is like a bad habit, because for long times we have poisonous mind. The mind has been poisoned in the world, and so we need this. We have need of an inner war, and in order to fight this war, we need three qualities. One is compassion, the other is wisdom, and one of the qualities too. Then we need a power in order to help oneself and other beings. We need these three qualities of compassion, wisdom, and the power to help ourselves and other beings. And how we need to use these things. We have been in long sleep. However, we have not used these things before, and now we need to use them. Because all people have Buddha nature. Everybody, there's not somebody who does have and somebody who does not have. However, it's because people don't see this, and they have been covered up through habits and concepts. And so we must examine how strong they are, and we must learn a method of how to overcome them. And one of the ways is through wisdom. There are the three wisdoms of hearing the teachings, or hearing the methods, thinking about them or contemplating on the methods, and then actually putting them into practice or meditation. And these are the three kinds of wisdoms that we must use. But first we must have love and compassion. First we have to have knowing, we have to have understanding, and then wisdom. And we must examine what reason or know why we are going on the spiritual path or undertaking spiritual methods.
This is first category. Says all water. Say Buddhism sometimes says six realms. Sometimes says three realms. The what ways all circle existence is what has all people got three sufferings. We are not on all.
And Rinpoche says how we wake up from this, we must do practice, and in order to do practice so that the obscurations become less and less. And we must think that all people have been our mother, and our father have been our parents. We not only think for ourselves, but we think for all beings. When we hear, when we are practicing the wisdom of hearing or contemplation or meditation, then we think that not only myself, but all people need this. We must raise the compassion at the time of practicing the three wisdoms. And we also must have a goal. As when you shoot an arrow at a target, you must have a goal in order to shoot. If you are aiming an arrow, you must have a goal to shoot at. It's not just enough to shoot at your feet. That isn't a very good target. But you should have a target, a far away target. And the target of beyond suffering is not like a complete target or a complete motivation. One must have the idea of liberating all beings. One must have that compassion. However, we do not at this time have the compassion, the power. Though we have the compassion, we don't have the power. Buddhahood means one's own self-nature. And it is the similar, or an example is given of a butter lamp inside a vase. Now we have the Buddha nature within, but we cannot see it like a butter lamp inside a vase. So this vase must be broken. And when you break the vase, it does not make any difference to the butter lamp. It wasn't good, bad before and become good. It was just there. It was the butter lamp. In the same way, the Buddha nature is not affected by concepts of good and bad. However, we must break through the four obscurations. One thing Rinpoche said before, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot. Rinpoche talked in Nadjesa during Golatini drama. I'm sorry, in the beginning, Rinpoche talked about the categories of the Buddhist way of dividing the world, which is of the six realms, and sometimes it's six or sometimes three. Then he talks also of the three sufferings. He said he will not explain very much about all these things. He could go into them in great detail, but then he does that, and then everything, time runs out. Everybody else's time is taken up with Rinpoche's talk. And the root of all these sufferings is attachment and the three poisons. We are always giving importance to the ego, to I, to our land, our country, and our relatives. And so how to change? And then again, going back to how to change, first one realizes that all beings have been our mother and father, and that the Buddha Shakyamuni has given these Sanjay Gatini, Rong Gatini, who sees that all beings have been once mother and father. The Buddha, through his omniscience, is able to see that all beings have been once mother and father through his own practice of accumulating merits and of purifying the obscurations or the conditions. He is able to see that all beings have been one's mother and father.
Okay, then. You then?
Rinpoche.
Oh.
Rinpoche, you talk for so long.
It's 100,000 tens I'm hearing. Rinpoche, short talk, short
talk. He never listens to that. And so the result, what is the result? The result is to wake up. One has to wake up. When one breaks through these four obscurations, the result is Buddhahood. Buddhahood is not like the goal. That is not like the real goal. But the goal is that through this, one is able to help all beings with one's body, speech, and mind. Through one's body, speech, and mind. Through this, one is able to help to bring world peace. And through this practice, or through the merit and the dedication of this, one is able to help beings, not only in this world, but according to Buddhism, there are the threefold universe. The threefold universe is, there are like this universe, there are 1,000 universes. That is multiplied by another 1,000, and then that is multiplied by another 1,000. And so when one attains Buddhahood, one has the ability to liberate beings in all those 3,000 universes, not only just like this world, but in all these universes.
That is this, then you now then one point, then follow it. This way, do you need Then said, I'm not secretary. I very open man. Says all very unfixed. This is not so, maybe not so benefit. Maybe I don't know. Maybe ask the people's thinking. This first on check all what can. Not only one good, one bad. Personal on karmas, what connection has. This is more understand easy. Then practice doing easy, so there one connection has, each religion one quality has. This way, this ignorance is antidote. Desire is antidote all.
First, we have to look and see the different ideas of which people have. We should have open mind. We should not be sectarian towards other people or other people's ideas and or close to them. Through ignorance, we should not close ourselves, but we should be very open and see, just like food. We don't know what a food tastes like, so then first we have to eat it. First we have to experience it. Mm-hmm. However, when you see people's ideas or you understand them, it does not mean that you have to mix them all up.
Oh, geez, yeah, for this one.
You're not
like, oh, 39, right. The example Rinpoche gave was that, you know, suppose you've got, I'm going to change a little bit, but suppose you've got this this junkyard, right, filled with, you know, automobile parts and airplane parts and truck parts and tractor parts, and you need an apt vehicle, right? Well, so you want to fly somewhere. So you go to the tractor and you get its carburetor, and you go to the Volkswagen, you get its steering wheel, and you go to the airplane, you get its wings, and pretty soon you put this fantastic Rube Goldberg together. Mm-hmm. It's just a mixture of everything, but it's not going to get you anywhere. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what Rinpoche is saying by that example is it's a really interesting time. You know, it's a moment where you can make a sort of theosophy out of all the world's religions, or it's a moment where you can honor the difference and find the path that's correct for you.
Yes, one must find one's own karmic connection. Mm-hmm. Like, you can experience them, and then you can see what religion, you see what qualities each religion has. And then you can see what is best for yourself. But it does not mean you take them all and you mix them up, because it's not going to make any
respect other own about eat, then they eat. And that's it today.
He's not finished. Hold on. Give yourself a break. He hates to hear it again.
Rinpoche said that the antidote for ignorance is wisdom. The antidote for
desire
is what?
Love, compassion.
Love and compassion, and the antidote for anger is patience. And in patience, for example, at first one must start out with one's own self and apply patience there, then to one's family, and then to one's enemy, and then out to the world. And if you think, for example, in the beginning, if you don't particularly have an enemy in the beginning, however, one has to train oneself in the beginning to have patience, and then one can apply it. Hmm. But if you think that, if you look at somebody who is your enemy, and you think of the suffering that they are experiencing, you think of the suffering that if your family will experience if you retaliate or whatever, and you think of the uselessness of the whole thing, and therefore you will raise patience.
Yeah. Okay, the patient has been okay.
All right. So, Rinpoche yesterday talked about motivation as being the first thing that we must examine in order to understand why we're here and why we're sitting at this room at this talk. And what I'd like us to do for just a minute is to pause and to look in a really clear and sharp way at why we've chosen to come to hear Rinpoche and me. I mean, is it a tourist trip? Is he, you know, very wonderful and exotic? Is it because you want to understand something about two different traditions, which Rinpoche and I represent as images sometimes? Or is it for another reason? And if so, keep, when you start refining your investigation, keep challenging yourself, warrior-like, with why. It's a question we don't ask. It's not a good question to ask why. It's usually how. How can we do this? But I ask you to take the inquiry of why, like a sword, and keep refining your response. And let's take a few minutes to do this. Why are we here? Why are you here?
I'm searching for a path.
Thank you. Why are you searching for a path?
I don't know whether it's, I would rather have somebody provide me with one rather than building my own. I'm not quite sure.
Why can't you build your own?
I suppose I could.
Why should you?
To fit my needs.
What are your needs?
Having a goal.
What is your goal?
That's what I don't have.
Oh, thank you. So this is your challenge. To understand. As Rinpoche, the wonderful example, you have a bow and arrow, right? You can shoot it, and it can just go nowhere. You can aim it at your foot. It can be a heavy teaching. But I'm reminded of a very interesting story. Apropos of the bow and arrow and the goal. Years ago, Jack Kornfield and I did a program. We literally dreamed it up one Sunday afternoon. It was called Buddhism in Mind, and it's where I met Sansanin. And where I said to Jack, you know, I've heard many Dharma talks, and I feel that I have a very strong karmic connection with the Dharma. But my life is such that, you know, for me to go tromping around to different centers and looking for teachers, I can't do it. And what I'd like to do is to bring a magnificent display of the Dharma to Big Sur and to just see what happens, you know, what the alchemy is, not only for me, but for many people like me. Well, I know Jim was there, and other people in this room, I think, were there. It was a very unusual situation, a lot of alchemy, I'd say. And one of the wonderful teachers who came back, Kwong Sensei, where I met Kwong Sensei, it's where I met Sansanin, is lots of karma happened. Good karma. And one of the teachers who came was a beautiful Zen master, Koben Shino Sensei. And Koben Shino, if you haven't met him, I will do an injustice to him by describing him because he's quite indescribable. Outwardly, he appears to be rather plain looking and timid. And when he speaks, there seems to be a complete absence of confidence there. This is a Zen master, and he giggles, and his words, Rinpoche, he's had his English longer than you, but his words come out in a sort of halting manner, as though you're not even clear he knows what he's saying. He's a Zen master, you say? And he giggles a lot and shakes like a bird, you know, who's gotten wet and shaking the moisture off his feathers. So it happens that Koben Shino is a master of Zen archery. What do you think? Now, how can this little timid Zen master, this is your outside evaluation and your concept, possibly be a master of Zen archery? So in any case, the day came for Koben Shino to do his demonstration of Zen archery. Well, actually, you know, there's a moment where you go, this is just insane. Here you are at Esalen Institute, which is the place in a way that cultivates the fabrication of the ego more than any place in the world. And here, all these, you know, egoless, and many of them are, in fact, extraordinary Buddhist teachers are coming. And they're in the hot baths, right? You know? And they're in this place where people are examining their egos like crazy and creating, you know, more and more deeper systems of ego construct. So you think this is absolutely perfect, this kind of situation. And so all the, you know, Esalen types and then the Buddhist types are out on the lawn in front of the dining area, and Kobenchino comes out and he's impeccably dressed as usual. And you notice his attire is somewhat changed from this ordinary Zen master attire. And so many years ago, I can't give you a precise account of the accoutrements, but he walked out to a rock and he placed a white Kuan Yin, beautiful porcelain statue, on a rock. And he walked back and then he began to drop the kimono, the first kimono, from his shoulder, and then the second kimono, and then he wrapped the bow guards and the finger guards on him, and he had on a kind of sweatband on his head. And then he picked up this bow, which was about 4 feet taller than he was. You know, this is going to be interesting. I mean, how is he going to get the thing kind of lined up? We haven't got a ladder for Kobenchino. And then he had a quiver in which there were 3 very plain arrows, and there were 3 feathers on the arrow, again very plain and very brown, and I noticed the arrows had silver tips. And he pulled from his quiver an arrow, and he held his bow in front of him like this, and he pulled it to the side, and you could see that the bow was strung very strongly, right? And I mean, it's just, he's shaking with the strength that he has to manifest to pull the bow. And his arm, excuse me. And he's pulling the bow with all of his strength. And he turns it in front of him and holds it above his head. And he lets go of the string with a, ah! Well, wow. And the arrow shot over the cliff and disappeared into the ocean. And he let go with another arrow with an equal, ha! And, oh, God, well, you could really hear Kobenchino, but was that Kobenchino? Anyway, so then the, quotes, demonstration was finished, and the bow was put down, and his bow guards and finger guards were taken off, and, you know, there's a beginning, a middle, and an end, and he ended absolutely perfectly, and he turned around to the crowd, and he, you know, bowed, everything meticulous, everything ordered, everything utterly simple, everything completely plain and ordinary. And he said, any question? So one, it's like there's always one poor slob, you know, who's going to ask the perfect question, right? He sacrifices himself for the perfect question. So this guy raises his hand, he says, Kobenchino says, yes. He says, well, Kobenchino, I read Zen and the Art of Archery by Eugene Herigel. And I understand that you're supposed to have a target when you shoot, and you know, your arrow just went over the cliff and didn't go anywhere. So Kobenchino goes, target everywhere. Thank Kobenchino. Target everywhere. This your goal. Target everywhere. Path everywhere. Like the medicine wheel teachings. The medicine wheel teachings, everything is a medicine wheel. Everywhere you look is a symbol. Ultimately, in the beginning, that symbol is closed. The teachings are closed. We are closed to each other because we have obscurations. But through practice, through proper practice, where our motivation is really clear, where our dedication is really strong, when we understand why we're doing it, when we've cut through to the core reason of why we need a goal, then we understand everywhere we look is like the medicine wheel, which is like a mirror, completely empty and completely filled with teachings. And so, in a funny way, we cut into trying to understand. When we understand, from one point of view, when Rinpoche talks about compassion, you think compassion is this, you know, everywhere you look, you see suffering. Well, it's really true. Even Mahagosananda. I mean, you look at this man, and actually, it's just almost looking at nothing. And there's such exquisite emptiness there. And you look at his life, and why is he doing this with his life? He couldn't know, truly, he couldn't know about this suffering without having known it within himself. And so he leads this life of absolute dedication. Rinpoche lost everything. He lost his monastery, he lost his sangha, he lost all the objects of worship that had been passed from him to him over many generations as a tulku. He lost that. He lost his family. He lost his country. I mean, he really, it's amazing to see him talk with Indians, Native Americans, you know, who are bitter. I mean, here he is, you know, he's just beginning to come into some English. And his desire to teach, because he's such an amazing warrior and such an extraordinary teacher, is so great that he weeps, and he'll hit me in the head for saying this, because there is a barrier of language between him and between you. And he will stay up all night to teach one student. Last night he was up until late. This morning he was up really, really early. This is how the teachers are. Because they've asked that question, why am I here? And they have attained that warrior within them completely. And what is this warrior, we ask? Well, a soldier is one whose authority is outside. A soldier takes orders all the time. The captain says, do this, and the soldier goes off and does this. A soldier is completely at the effect of some external authority. A warrior, however, is one like Rinpoche, or Sensei, or Sansanin, or Mahagosananda. That authority is not only within, but without. Such teachers, such warriors understand the relationship between cause and effect. They understand they are in the position of cause. And through their extraordinary example, they help others to understand how they make life and death, how they make their own karma, thus helping individuals to awaken from the dream of delusion, where we experience ourselves completely at the effect of something without. This morning, when Sansanin and the other teachers gathered in the hall, it was really beautiful something Sansanin said. You know, Rinpoche said, you know, it's, was talking about how it's so good for us to come together and to, you know, to be together in this way as friends and to come to understand each other's ways and really what we can do. Sansanin says, we must attain primary point first. What is this primary point? Ha! What is this primary point? In Sesshin, sometimes somebody will let go with one of those, and I'll just laugh after I get over my... Because I'll realize after it's happened that for a moment we attained primary point, all of us together. And that's really what the objective is. It's not you get your primary point, you get your primary point, you get your primary point, you get your primary point. this is not so helpful because all of our primary points are pooping, popping at different rates. This is not so good, really. This is not so helpful. We want to attain primary point together. And in my very ignorant way, and just relating to many teachers from, you know, the happy karma or unhappy karma, because they mostly relate to me by hitting me in the head. But from one point of view, I see that the teachers are attempting to bring us all as quickly as possible. So, you know, Rinpoche and Sansanin and Sensei, it's just, they go to extremes to help us, because they realize that more than ever, the interdependence of the all and the everything, that one person attaining enlightenment, well, this is great, but the one who doesn't can press the button that creates a lot of suffering for those who don't know about impermanence. And even that temporary suffering is suffering that's valid. Mm-hmm. And some of the teachers have said to me, really, I cannot become, and this, I don't think Rinpoche would say this because he's a fully enlightened being, but some teachers say, I cannot become enlightened until all of us have become enlightened. Mm-hmm. Very strong. So if you're a student like I am, and quite endarkened with, you know, a sense of ego that's been very consciously cultivated in my culture, and struggling, like, you know, to cut away every falseness, every hypocrisy, every absence moment of where there's absence of integrity, it's just, you cringe, you really know it, so you sometimes suffer 10 times worse than those people who aren't aware of their suffering. This warrior path that I spoke about yesterday is a conscious attempt for those of us who are in an unconscious warrior culture. But actually, it's a soldier culture. It's not a warrior culture. To realize completely our warrior nature and to do, again, etymology so beautiful, to know that the word warrior comes from the Old English were, which means confusion. To understand that the warrior's job is to cut through the knot of confusion. The warrior considers everything sacred, including death, including suffering, and recognizes that the worst has already happened. But it's not that the warrior's going to make a cult out of death. Rather, it's a story. One day I was having dinner at the New York Athletic Center with Joseph Campbell. And I was reminded of it because Rinpoche last night talked to me about my health, and I have a fairly vigorous schedule. And sometimes my body is not able to keep up with my schedule. I'm dragging this heap of ashes along and teaching, you know, and going really high with it, but my body hurts. So he was saying, you know, my diet is not correct diet for this kind of schedule, and he really feels I should eat meat. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't like to have milk products, mucus-forming milk and meat, you know, killing sentient beings also, it's hard to digest. And I know, I've heard the explanation of, you know, Rinpoche's explanation of it's, you know, when you water your garden, lots of sentient beings drown, and really, Joan, you need meat. Well, when he was telling me that last night, I was reminded of a dinner I had with Joe Campbell at the New York Athletic Club. And he ordered a just incredible roast beef. I mean, you know, the rarest, bloodiest roast beef. And I ordered a spinach salad without bacon. And Joe's, and he was drinking the Glenlivet, and I was drinking Perrier with lime. Right, you know? He was actually having a heck of a lot more fun than me, you know, suffering in my virtue, right? So Joe's bloody roast beef arrived, and my spinach salad arrived, and it just looks so damn dull, I can't tell you, you know. And Joe picked up this sharp knife, you know, he had this Glenlivet gleam in his eye, and he attacked this beef, and he put this piece of raw roast beef in his mouth, and his blood is dripping down his chin, you know, and he goes, Joan, he says, this is insane, don't you understand, he says, in his sort of best Irish style, he says, life feeds on life, and the Upanishads, Joan, This is a non-cow eating Upanishads, right? He says, oh wonderful, oh wonderful, oh wonderful. I am food, I am food, I am food. I who am food eat the eater of food. Thus is the mystic doctrine. Or thus is the giveaway. As with the Mayans, you go into the Mayan world who are like the Buddhas of the West, truly the Buddhists of the West. Quetzalcoatl is, you know, is that great avatar of the Mayan world who said, human sacrifice, no. The only thing we sacrifice is ourselves. We give away ourselves every moment. And in the Mayan caves, the great grottos, you'll find metate. These are corn grinders. Mm-hmm. Hundreds of tiny metate, just like the millstone in our European world. In order to become who we are, we must break the husk which separates us, and we must become food for the gods. As the corn is ground by the metate, as the millstone crushes the grain, so also do we give away ourselves in order to realize our true nature. Now, in the Medicine Wheel teachings, it is interesting to see where does the warrior sit. Yesterday, I gave the four enemies of the warrior. Today, I'd like to talk about what's called the circle of law. Briefly. Very briefly. So that we can understand the position of the warrior on the medicine wheel. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, when I speak about warrior, I'm speaking also from the point of view of the shaman warrior. That is, the warrior is one who is not fighting an external battle. A warrior is one who has fought the inner battle about which Rinpoche was referring earlier. The warrior is the one who has understood the location of the battlefield and has seen the true enemies, the enemy of fear, the enemy of clarity, the enemy of death, and the enemy of power. Apropos of the enemy of power, Mahagosananda yesterday, someone asked me about power, and Mahagosananda in his Buddha's birthday talk gave six aspects of power, and I'd like to remind us of those aspects because this is precisely what we're talking about when we're in the East, in the direction where the enemy of power dances, and when the power transforms from enemy into ally, then we realize the power of the Dharma. When power has become an ally, we have realized the power of virtuous action, being and thought in the world, in speech. We have realized the power of good qualities. We have realized the power of merit. One of the beauties of merit that we accumulate for ourselves is we can give it away. This merit has great power. And the sixth power is the power of wisdom. Rinpoche was saying, you know, in the three wisdoms, we can hear the teachings and they can have a really good effect on us. We can think about the teachings and they can cure us of all kinds of ills as we meditate upon the teachings. But truly, giving the teachings away through correct action in the world, this is the greatest of wisdom. And this refers to our motivation. As attending to the vows that we take when we take bodhisattva vows, really. What is this altruistic mind of enlightenment that we are trying to cultivate? This is the bodhisattva mind. And who is the bodhisattva? The bodhisattva is the awakening warrior. Is the one who has complete courage, complete heart. What is courage? Kur. Complete compassion. To come into the world and to give away without conditions, without any sense of, well, another gold star. Boy, I've sure done a great meritorious act. I'm such a virtuous person. the bodhisattva is frequently the one who wears no robe, who is completely ordinary, completely invisible. And then there are the bodhisattvas who display their bodhisattva nature by wearing robes in order to help you see where good teachings can be sought for if you need some reflection fast. So this warrior in the circle of law dances in a particular place. What I want to give you is the circle of law, because what it is a picture of the mind and society. And it is the mind in terms of eight main displays of mind qualities, or society in terms of eight potentials of understanding, eight points of view. And the circle of law can be used to adjudicate inner process, or it can be used to work to make order in the social field. And we use it frequently at the foundation. And I've taught many groups to use it. It's a tool, it's a method for self-understanding and for understanding society. And I can't give you all the teachings which stand and weave into it, because we have no time. It's like Rinpoche feels really frustrated. You know, he says one word and there's 9,000 pages of text resonating behind that one word. And this teaching is not in scripture, so I can't say we'll go to this book or that book, but I'll just give you what I can. And then let the archetype dance inside of you, the symbol dance inside of you, and teach you. And maybe it'll be useful, maybe it won't. It's okay. All right. We're going to work on a medicine wheel of eight directions and a center. And we'll start at the eastern gate. This is the direction that is associated with illumination, with unlimited imagination, with enlightenment, with the sun and with the eagle, with clear vision. In terms of the temporal experience, it's transtemporal. It is no time and all time. Memory is completely engaged here. We have two men who sit at this gate, and they're very crazy. They're the clowns, the heyokas, the fools. They're the contraries. They're the ones who, like Chung Kwan, if you've met the mad monk, in the Zen tradition of Korea, Sansrin brought this totally insane Zen monk. And he had his robes on backwards, and they were full of patches, and he had a doll hanging around his neck, and he was carrying a plastic Tommy gun, and he had a fisherman's hat that was turned inside out, and he wore it upside down. And he is an artist of unlimited action. No hindrance style. Because it's like the fool in the tarot. When one has become completely awakened, you realize that this is a dream. Truly, this is just a dream. So the fool in the tarot returns to this world like a compassionate being from the world of his father, where it's all taken care of, right? He's got everything. Comes with this little knapsack and just a few little rags on his body, and is dancing right toward the cliff's edge, and the dog is ripping at his buttocks where he sits in the world. And he is stepping over the cliff into the great abyss where the reptilian nature of humanity is going, you know, the old brain is just waiting. Ah, my aggressor can't wait to get you. The reptilian brain is just hungry to eat up fools who are blind. But a wise fool can't be touched, has in a very clear way attained what Joe would call immortal consciousness, or eternally awakened consciousness. And this is where these heyokas sit. Now the heyoka, or the clown, in the Hopi dances, it's very interesting. You see the clown parodizing, satirizing, making absolute fun of the kachinas, who represent order in the world, but really in all the worlds. And there they are, the kachinas, emerging from the kiva, in complete unity, to absolute together action, extraordinary singing in absolute unison. The dance steps are not militaristic stiff, but I mean they are completely coordinated. and completely unified. And what happens? The Goshari come in, and the first thing they do is they take the sacred corn pollen and they throw it in the eyes of not only the spectators, but also the leader of the Kachinas, blinding the dancers. Then they go over to the drummer and they put their hands over the drummer's face and grab his arms so that the drummer can't keep beat. So chaos comes in to disturb cosmos. And they dance with each other, and it's like a war between chaos and cosmos. But that war is a war that teaches. And this is the job of the Heyoka, to teach us how we have been conditioned to react instead of act directly, to see how our habits have blinded us totally. Now, the Heyoka's note are two men, and in the circle of law and how one works with it as a social tool, the Heyokas are not allowed to vote. But everything that comes into the circle of law has to pass through the gate of the contraries. Okay. The second is in the southeast. It's a man and a woman. The southeast is that direction associated with tradition, with the ancestors. And here we have the peace chiefs. The peace chiefs carry the lineage. They are the link between the great wisdoms of the past and the potential of the future. And they understand very clearly that to throw our traditions away is to literally castrate ourselves, or to cut our nose off despite our face. It's to dismember us from the ground of being. It's the same kind of dismembering that many people in Western culture experience with regards to nature. We have lost our own nature, the nature of our like the codons in our genetic structure. They carry the potential for our complete realization. And to forget that brings about disharmony, brings about war, that is confusion. In the South, then, we have a man and a woman who sit. Now, the South is associated with innocence and with trust. And here our mythology is found. That is the story that our culture has given about who we are, where we come from, and where we're going. It also is where our personal mythology can be found. And in this direction, interestingly, of innocence of the South, whom do we find? We find the warrior chiefs. For there is nowhere, when you see the wheel, nowhere else they could stand on the wheel impeccably, except in the South, in the place of trust and innocence. When I construct the wheel, you'll understand why. And what is the warrior's job? The first enemy of the warrior is the enemy of fear. The warrior's job is to, at first, in the first instance, to give us the courage to face our little selves by understanding our personal history. And not by rejecting our personal history, but allowing it to be a teacher to us so that true compassion can develop. And what awakens is an attitude of humility. So the warrior chiefs are in the South. In the Southwest, where we find our experience of the dream, we find the medicine chiefs, again a man and a woman. And like the peace chiefs and the warrior chiefs and the method that we work with, these chiefs are allowed to vote as well. Now, notice we have a man and a woman in these three places. This is not to say that men and and women think the same and feel the same. Truly, there's a very profound and important difference in the masculine and the feminine perspective. So it's good the way this wheel is constructed. because the masculine and the feminine perspective are honored here. And so the medicine chiefs are the dreamers. They see through the vehicle of the dream to the place where the symbols of the dream are completely open, and they are the ones who can teach us to dream this dream awake. And that is their job on the wheel, to open the closed symbols and to give us the contexts and the methods for awakening the dream. In the West, we have two chiefs. This is the place of the earth and the physical body. This is that experience of intuition and introspection that informs our self-nature. And we have here the women chiefs, and they are allowed to vote. The women chiefs, you know, in the Sundance teachings, they say that all things are born of woman. This is, there are two laws in the Sundance. All things are born of woman. And never pass a law that will harm the children. That's including, you know, little ones like that, and also our inner child, the child within us, our magical child. So the women represent that totality and also that capacity for inward looking. In the Northwest, we have here our rules and laws. That is, what kind of rules has society given us? These are civil and social laws of the North. What kind of rules operate in nature? These are natural laws of the South. What kind of rules are the 270 rules, the magical laws? These are the magical laws of the West, the laws that dance and work with change. And what kind of rules and laws dance in the East? These are the cosmic laws. And this is where we find our rules and laws, but we find them only in terms of the dynamics of cause and effect. Cause and effect. How these rules and laws dance in relation only to cause and effect. From the Buddhist point of view, we just say this is what we find our karma there. How do our rules and laws make our life? And we find here the council chiefs. Now, the council chiefs, interestingly enough, work in a hilarious way. As the medicine chiefs work through the dream, the council chiefs are working with compromise. They're always trying to make all the rules and laws work in some kind of way, and they're constantly compromising, just like our politicians do, to try to make something work, like Rinpoche's, you know, airplane with a tractor engine. Okay, in the North, this is the direction of the mind, the direction of wisdom, of logic, the experience of our philosophy. We have here again a man and a woman, as we have with the council chiefs, a man and a woman. Now, what do we find here? We find, interestingly enough, the worker chiefs. Why would the worker chiefs be in the North? The worker chiefs are either in the position of being absolutely mindless, that is completely at the effect of the politicians or the warriors, most particularly in Western culture, or the worker chiefs understand, have true wisdom, and understand what work truly needs to be done in order to bring about harmony in society and nature. And in the Northwest, our last direction. The Northwest is a very interesting direction. It is associated with the Northeast. It's the Northwest associated with the laws of, or law of cause and effect. The Northeast is associated with the law of cycles, with periodicity, rhythmicity, with science. And we find here the law chiefs. These are the ones who not only understand the law, but put the law into motion, who design the energy movement of the individual, of society, and society's relationship to nature. Now, in the way of the working of the wheel, you must understand that in the center of this wheel, there's a fire, all right? That fire is called the children's fire. The children's fire must be kept awake, must be kept alive. And there are two elders, two wise ones, a grandmother and a grandfather, who feed this fire. Realize this is a picture of our mind. The great wise ones feed our child, our magical child, our precious child, which in fact, from the point of view of this metaphor, is an image of our heart. Now, in the working of the wheel, the first rule in the working of the wheel is that no one can speak across the children's fire. Can you imagine what it would be like, for example, if the warriors in the South told the workers what to do? We'd be in real trouble. Can you imagine the Hayokas humiliating the women, speaking from east to west, so on? So that children's fire, or the compassion at the center that is guided by the elders, is what keeps order in our mind, working with this metaphor. All right, now how do we use this wheel on the practical level? And I frequently use it, take the question of weaponry. And I'll just, as an example, because we're just about coming in to the finish line. Let us introduce a law, then, into this world. Say that the great elders have come together, the great wise ones, men and women, have come together in a gathering together circle, because the threat of planetary annihilation is truly upon us. And we must examine this question of weaponry. I mean, this is insane. There's how many tons of TNT for each human being on Earth? There's some just amazing amount, just to blow us completely off the face of this planet and to render this planet sick for a long time, though she has tremendous powers of regeneration. Nonetheless, we certainly can do a bang-up job on ourselves. So the council comes together. Finally, that we're so irritated by the potential of the Holocaust, you know, we put our body on the line, we take our monies out of the bank, and we say, okay, let's get people who have values that are really developed together, even though sometimes it's hard for them to hear one another in the language, they can hear one another in the heart. We'll get simultaneous translation, and let's put our circle of law into motion. All right, so they come together and they decide the question, really, that we need first to address, because it's a kind of practical question. It has to do with, you know, atomic bombs. So let us pass a law, it is decided, that all atomic bombs, you know, weaponry, will be abolished. Wonderful. So some soul is given the job of bringing the question into the circle of law. And the first thing they do is they try to get in through the east, where the Hayokas sit. But what do the Hayokas do? Being good clowns, they do everything to keep them out from introducing the question. How strong is our commitment, truly, to examining our situation? And how clever are we at bringing our situation into the light so we can examine it skillfully? Our delusions and our rules and laws keep us from breaking into that. For example, the rule says that you have to go through the eastern gate. So most people, you know, have a fight with the Hayokas trying to get in. Well, I always break the rules and laws. I just walk around to another part of the circle and walk in. You have to break rules. Sansanim in the first precept ceremony that we were ever in. Remember, you know, here we are, and our arms burning up and all this doo-wah and ceremony. And at the end he says, you know, it's like really serious and it's going on for hours and boy, everybody's blown out. And he says, well, you have to learn when to keep your precepts and when to break them. You know, what are we going to do? March in lockstep to just the rules and laws that were relevant? No, we have to break them frequently. So you have to break in frequently through a new doorway into the circle of inquiry. Then you say, okay, I would like to pass a law, Ayoka chiefs, that all nuclear weaponry be abolished. All weaponry, in fact, be abolished. And the Hayokas go, pss, pss, pss. The Hayokas then take the question and they say, thank you very much, then we will give you the law. They say, we would like to propose that every man, woman, and child be given at least an M2 rifle or an M1, I don't know anything about weaponry, and every home should have an atomic bomb. The inquirer then takes the law to the peace chiefs. The law has been totally reversed. stood on its head, contrary to 180 degrees, instead of rashly trying to figure the damn thing out, right? It's been completely contraried. And then it will be examined in its contrary, first by the male peace chief or the female peace chief, then by the male peace chief, the female war chief, the male war chief, the female medicine chief, the male medicine chief, the woman chiefs, the council chiefs, the worker chiefs, and then to the law chiefs in its reversed or its contrary form. Very important you look on the other side of things. Very important you change your point of view every once in a while in order to get depth of field. Very interesting, this method. Then the law chiefs, the two laws of the Sundance that are invariable, all things are born of woman and never pass a law that will harm the children. Well, my gosh. After you have the successive examination, and the way the wheel is constructed is very interesting. The more you work with the wheel, you see how the traditions inform sacred warriors, how the sacred warriors inform the medicine chiefs, how the medicine chiefs provide form for the woman chiefs, how the woman chiefs can give form and inform to the council chiefs, how the council chiefs, it's all an accumulation of wisdom, then give form to the worker chiefs, and then all this is brought to the law chiefs, who then operate from the point of view of those first two laws, all things are born of woman. Anything that would dishonor, and yesterday I said how, you know, everything in this room, including all of us sitting here and the coat rack, was born of women, whether it's, you know, a biological mother in terms of a sentient being or the earth, even the atom bomb. And then what happens? The law dogs then start to analyze the law in relation to these different reflections or points of view. Now our mind is capable of doing this. And then the law is reintroduced because it's been refined from the shadow perspective. The shadow has literally been illumined through this inquiry. And the law is then refined, re-presented, and if it's not the same law that was introduced the first time, but a new law, a refreshed or revisioned law, then it's again reversed. How many delusions can we code into this refination? How many belief systems are still hanging us up? Now, you can see, and from one point of view, how this is our mind, but many of us don't have our woman chiefs developed. Many of us don't have our peace chiefs speaking within us. Some of us, our children's fire is dead. And what happens when our children's fire is dead? All the voices are articulating and talking across simultaneously. We know this is schizophrenia. It's the babble, the Tower of Babel. It's the mob milling around in our head. We have completely lost the beauty of this quality of order. So the warrior then, in the practice that he or she does, works with the circle of law in order to refine all points of view so that depth of field can be attained and true compassion, the children's fire, can be awakened. It's 5 minutes, okay. I'd like to finish this with a gift that was given to me recently after I did that teaching, which I did really rapidly and skimpily, I apologize. But someone walked up to me and handed me this piece of paper. People are always handing me pieces of paper, and they're just, sometimes they're really amazing. And some of you at the Zen Center, because I read this and somebody said, some people at the Zen Center, I think they know that too. I think John told me. So I want to share this with you, those of you who have not heard this, because it will be entirely familiar to you. And actually, the way I've been doing it is in a call and response form. And I'd like to do it now in that way. And so that would mean that I would say the line and that you would repeat it. What I'd like us to do, so as not to overwhelm the next room, is to do it in, you know, sotto voce. And really do it in an inside way, but let us be heard. Okay? And this is a poem from the 14th century. From an anonymous samurai. I have no parents. I make the heaven and earth my parents.
I have no home.
I make awareness my home.
I have no life or death.
I make the tides of breathing my life and death.
I have no divine power.
I make honesty my divine power.
I have no means.
I make understanding my means.
I have no secrets.
I make character my magic secret.
I make character my magic secret.
I have no body. I make endurance my body.
I have no eyes.
I make the flash of lightning my eyes.
I make the flash of lightning my eyes.
I have no ears. I make sensibility my ears. I have no limbs. I make promptness my limbs. I have no strategy. I make unshadowed by thought my strategy. I have no designs. I make seizing the opportunity by the forelock my design. I have no miracles. I make right action my miracle. I have no principles. I make adaptability to all circumstances my principle.
I make adaptability to all circumstances my principle.
I have no tactics.
I
make emptiness and fullness my tactics.
I make emptiness and fullness my tactics.
I have no talent.
I
make ready wit my talent.
I have no friends.
I make my mind my friend.
I have no enemy.
I make carelessness my enemy. I have no armor. I make benevolence and righteousness my armor.
I make benevolence and righteousness my armor.
I have no castle.
I
make immovable mind my castle.
I make immovable mind my castle.
I have no sword. I make absence of myself my sword.
I make absence of myself my sword.
I'm so happy. You're not to follow.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.